there, football fans. Welcome to the Soccer Central podcast. I am James Sharman, joined as always on Monday by John Molinaro of Sportsnet.ca. Lots to get to today. We'll talk some MLS very shortly and also some German Bundesliga with Stefan Bienkowski. Another bad weekend for Borussia Dortmund, JMO.
Very bad.
It's official. It's a crisis.
Well, you joke about it, but I don't think that's overstating it. I mean, you look at it, they're coming off that loss to Arsenal in Champions League and then, you know, bottom of the table in the Bundesliga.
Like, dead last in December
dead last.
Is crisis if so, you appreciate Dortmund.
Yeah, so I think it's not an exaggeration at all to suggest that they're in crisis mode.
We'll also talk some Ballon d'Or, I think, at some point in today's show, that the finalists have been announced. And there's one maybe kind of a surprise there, but let's be honest. The usual boys are there and they'll be fighting it out for the top gong in world football. But let's start by talking some Major League Soccer. Yes, we are set for the final. It will be LA against New England. We're joined now by Fox Soccer's Kyle McCarthy. Kyle, how you doing?
I'm doing very well, thanks. How are you guys?
Great, thanks. Really good. So it's LA New England, not LA New York. The Revs beat New York this past weekend. Now, do you think MLS, they're not unhappy? I mean, New England's a big market, you know, they're a storied team, and LA, New England has some panache, no doubt, but deep down, they must have loved to have had a New York-LA final.
It would have been the Holy Grail. for that, for years and years, and hoped and prayed that it might come to fruition. It just didn't happen this year because New England stepped forward and ushered the Red Bulls out of the postseason.
You've had a busy 48 hours. I mean, you were in New England on the game on Saturday, then you flew out to Seattle to catch the second leg of the Western Conference Final. Just want to get your general observations, Kyle, on what you took away from those two games, and how do you think New England and LA match up next Sunday in the MLS Cup Final?
I think what I took was the common bonds between the two successful teams. You get LA grinding through against Seattle last night, slick surface. Difficult situation, difficult circumstances, figured out a way to win and reach MLS Cup for the fourth time in 6 years. New England faced the same sort of scenario on Saturday where New York put them down twice in the game. They found a way to respond and really show what they've been able to do toward the end of the season. I think it's going to make for a fascinating matchup with the Galaxy and how well they work in possession and the Revs and how much of a threat they pose on the counter.
What it was nice to see on Saturday that, you know, Gillette Stadium was, well, not sold out, but there was a nice sized crowd there for a change. I mean, what was the atmosphere like?
It was fantastic. It's just a great take. And you don't often say that about games at Gillette Stadium, but credit to the Revolution supporters. They've been fantastic as the team has improved for the second half of the season. They've had great crowds for several weeks now, and it really contributed to the sort of atmosphere that you always hope to see in an MLS playoff game.
Let's talk about the Galaxy here briefly, and Landon Donovan. We know, you know, what he's done, and it seems as if it's written in the stars now that he's going to go out a champion once again, although, you know, it's going to be a long 90 minutes for that to be proven. But you watch the way Donovan's playing and the playoff he's having right now. He's obviously a bit of a complicated figure, you know, and it's more than just about football. But from a football standpoint, this guy has got a lot still to offer, hasn't he?
Yes, he absolutely does. He could play on for several more years if he wanted to do so. I think we've seen that with his performances during the second half of the season. I didn't think he had his best first half in Seattle on Sunday night, but when the chips were down and the Galaxy needed him, I thought he had a significant impact after the break. And it shows you what he can provide. He's still got some of that pace, but he's really got the ingenuity and the camaraderie with Robbie Keane to pose a threat every time he steps on the field.
You know, with Donovan stepping aside next season, and we're hearing now also it's official, Thierry Henry is leaving as well. In many ways, you look at the next season, and it's a new era beginning. Donovan's gone, Henry's gone, incoming, Villa, Kaká, eventually, and certainly Frank Lampard as well. Is that how the league's seeing it? Do you think that it's kind of the new brave world as of next season?
It's time for a refresh.
Yeah.
Donovan and Henry have contributed plenty to the league. Donovan, in particular, one of the two most important signings in league history. But it's always good to integrate new players into the mix and freshen things up. And I think you'll get that with the new teams, New York City FC and Orlando City, and to have players like Kaká and Villa and Lampard come into the fold. I think it's good for the league to refresh and rely on new faces to drive the proceedings forward.
We're talking to Fox Soccer's Kyle McCarthy here on the Soccer Central podcast. Kyle, as we said, Henri, you know, today announcing that he's not going to re-sign with the Red Bulls, and he's going to take some time in terms of what his next move is. You know, for more than four seasons spent with the Red Bulls, fair to say that it went fairly successful, even though the Red Bulls didn't win MLS Cup. What do you think his legacy is going to be with regards to the league?
I think his legacy revolves around how seriously he took his duties with the Red Bulls.
Right.
He didn't come over here for a late career sojourn. He really invested in MLS, and he learned all the players. He poured himself into a Red Bull side that really needed him. Sure, there's some criticism about his reluctance to play on artificial surfaces, but when you look on the whole to what Thierry Henry contributed on the field and off the field to that club, and the sort of performances he put together during his time in MLS, I think history will look back upon him fondly.
What are the thoughts for the Red Bull as far as a replacement for Thierry Henry? We see their big arch rivals being born for next season, New York City FC, and they're obviously bringing in big-name players in Villa and Lampard. Regarding the Red Bull, what are you hearing? What are you thinking for next season?
It's interesting because this is an opportunity for the Red Bulls to shift their philosophy a little bit. I expect them to tamp down the spending a little bit. I don't know if there's going to be a like-for-like replacement for Thierry Henry. Mike Petke spoke about it after the game on Saturday, and he noted that the club's going to shift course. They're going to focus on something different. He didn't go into details, but I think reading between the lines, I think you'll see a Red Bulls team that won't go out and spend money on those big stars and focus more on developing players from within. It's a market shift for the club, and it'll be interesting to see how it takes hold.
New York FC is an interesting story too, you know, especially with this whole Lampard, you know, business, and there's continued talk that he's going to stay a little bit longer at Man City. How important do you think it is, Kyle, for him to be in a New York City FC uniform on the opening weekend of the season? Can this team, you know, trying to establish itself in a major market, can it afford to be without him for the first couple of weeks or first month of the season?
No. It absolutely cannot. And yeah, sure, New York City FC could survive, but the last thing you want in New York is a minor league team.
Right.
And that's the perception that would be created if Lampard stayed with Manchester City. And you can't blame Frank Lampard for wanting to hold on to the top level for as long as he can. And he's been very good for Manchester City since he joined them in the summer. But at the same time, he signed a contract with New York City FC, and his presence is vital to the club. He's the one who's going to have to carry most of the marketing load. He's the guy who's going to have to be the symbol of that team going forward. And if he is still in Manchester by the time the season kicks off, it's going to speak volumes about the relative importance of New York City FC in the wider Manchester City landscape.
It's funny, Kyle, you mentioned that shift of focus for the Red Bull, and several teams in the last couple of years have really shifted away from that, signing the aging European star, and they've gone for a lesser name but a younger player, perhaps in South America, to you know, different varying degrees of success. You look at this league as a whole, and I'm sure ideally they were sustainable enough, they could be getting, you know, lesser names and they'd be just fine, but we're seeing this off-season once again, you know, the older, aging European stars making a big move to MLS and the marketing powers that come with that. Do you think we'll ever see a day, at least in the near future, where that won't happen and where it will be sustainable purely with his own talent and perhaps less name but younger talent?
No, I don't think so. I think MLS is still at a point where it needs the cachet afforded by signing players like Kaká and David Villa and Frank Lampard. Those are entrees to a wider audience, and the game's still growing in the United States and Canada, and I think signing those big stars helps. That being said, it's important for MLS to continue to grow from within, particularly with its approach to player spending. If you're not going to go out and be competitive with top-level leagues in terms of the wages you pay. You have to find other ways to close that gap. So if you're going to do it, it starts by developing your own players and then taking advantage of the inefficiencies in the market in other places. I think MLS has done a better job of that over the past couple of years, but there's still improvement to be made and there's still growth to be had.
As a Boston-based reporter, obviously you're quite familiar with the Revs. Really incredible when you think about it, what they went through towards the end of May through June and July, losing 8 in a row, and yet they bounced back. They kept the faith with Jay Heaps, and they went on this pretty strong run down the regular season stretch, and really hit their form in the playoffs. What have you made of this turnaround that they underwent?
It's a testament to the character within their ranks, because they could have folded up shop during that tough spell during
the season.
And they managed to pull themselves out of it, and they received a boost at the right time. They had turned the form around, and then they got Jermaine Jones. And the show of faith from the Revolution investor operators to splash the money on Jermaine Jones really bolstered the morale within the team. I mean, it cannot be understated the sort of impact that a big signing like that, after years of not spending, has on the side. And I think that boost, combined with what Jones supplied on the field, really pushed the Reds to the next level as the season wound a little close.
You know, Jamie mentions there how a quick turnaround in MLS, either within the season or, from season to season, is possible, and we do see it on a regular basis. Just not so much here in Toronto, as you can tell. Now, my colleague here, John Molinaro, broke a story last week how TFC is talking to Garth Lagerwey, or at the very least very interested in Garth Lagerwey as their president. The Real Salt Lake man's done a great job there. We know that. Do you think it's time that he leaves Real Salt Lake, or would you be surprised if he jumps ship?
I think it's probably time for him to take on a new challenge. There's nowhere really for him to go with Real Salt Lake in terms of what he wants to achieve in his career. He wants to run a club. He wants to be a president, and he can't do that in Salt Lake. His path is blocked, so... if some other team is wise enough to give him the latitude to take over a club, then he should certainly weigh those possibilities. He's an inventive thinker, and he's a man who's proven that he's capable of doing more than just selecting players. Toronto FC would be very lucky to have him if they can land him for 2015.
Kyle, is and maybe I'm stretching here, but is this any sort of reflection on the RSL's ownership group? The fact that, they lost Jason Christ, now, Lagerwey is obviously an ambitious guy, and is, as you said, his career path at the club is kind of blocked. So if he wants to become a club president, he has to go elsewhere. Is this any way in a reflection, do you think, on Salt Lake and the ownership group there, or is this just, this is the business of football?
It is the business of football, and perhaps it's a modest reflection on RSL, but it's really just the sort of natural progression that you have at a club like that.
Right.
The Christ situation was unfortunate because they had some ownership transition issues last year, and that sort of limited the latitude to getting a deal done with Christ early when perhaps they could have secured a signature. But when you're at a club like Real Salt Lake, which always punches above its weight, it's natural to think, well, what could we do at a place with more resources and with more opportunities to go out and sign better players? And I think that's always going to be there, no matter how much RSL strives to keep its foundation in place.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. Finally, before we let you go, Brian Strauss of Sports Illustrated, who broke the story yesterday about the league expanding the playoff field from 10 to 12 teams next year. I don't know. What do you think? What are your thoughts on, I think it's going to be 60% of the league in qualifying for the postseason next year. Obviously that helps out TFC a big lot, but just wanted to get your general impression of them expanding the playoff field.
It was inevitable, but it's just another way to devalue the regular season.
Right.
If you're inviting 60% of your teams into the playoffs, it doesn't really say a whole lot about the meaning of those matches from March through October. And MLS has a problem in terms of the way it treats those regular season games. Those games right now aren't important enough. And I don't know if expanding the playoff field is a step in the right direction to help rectify that concern.
Kyle, thank you so much. Great job, and enjoy the MLS Cup final.
Well, thanks for having me, guys. I'll look forward to a little time in sunny LA.
Thanks. Sure you enjoy, will. Buddy.
That's Kyle McCarthy of Fox Soccer. You can follow Kyle on Twitter at Kyle J. McCarthy. That's McCarthy. It's a joke. Expanding the playoff format.
Yeah.
You know why they're doing it. We all know why. But like Carl mentioned, it completely devalues this regular season. Doesn't that need all the love it can get right now? The regular season.
I'm with you. I do think it devalues the importance of the regular season, and you know, 60%. Just on the optics of it, don't look good. However, I think like the NBA and the NHL are roughly around the same levels. Obviously, baseball is a lot less, but you know, this isn't unprecedented in sports in terms of. I remember as a kid when there were 21 teams in the NHL and 16 teams made the playoffs.
Yeah.
So that's
yeah.
like whatever it was, like close to 80%. So it's not unprecedented, but you're right. I mean, I think for a league like this, that's always going to have this sort of struggle for credibility. You know, I think letting in an extra two teams, you know, out of 20, it's the optics of this doesn't look good. However, as I said, this is absolutely brilliant for TFC.
Oh, yeah.
Because
yeah.
now six teams in the East qualify. They're going to have, plus New York and Orlando are going to be competing in the East, right? So,
yeah, sure.
like, they'll have absolutely no excuse not to make
excuses.
The playoffs. Well, you think about it, they're going to be dealing with two expansion teams. There's an extra spot up for grabs in the East.
So, like, so they qualify next year, and it's going, well, that's nice, but of course they had to. There's no reward,
right.
you know?
Well,
you know, where's the feel good factor? For TFC finally qualifying next year, if they make it, well, how could they not qualify?
Well, they'll qualify, and then I think at this point that's all like they'll take, right? Like they won't care that there's an asterisk beside it.
And for the record, just because you know NHL have the same, you know,
absolutely.
Either,
No.
It's too many for me, and I'm a Leaf fan for
sure.
crying out loud. There's too many teams qualifying.
My only point in raising that is that this isn't strictly an MLS.
Sure.
Like there is precedent in terms of other leagues.
Well,
having
more teams to qualify for the postseason means more gate receipts, means money.
Absolutely,
simple
sure.
as that, right? You know, but it's just a shame.
No, it is absolutely no.
Maybe more, I guess, games that might count late in the season, I suppose. If you expand it, that's why baseball added the wild card, right?
Right.
But, yeah, I don't know. I don't like it one bit.
No, neither do I. But, you know, the way that they're going, though, I mean, like, because the goal is to have, I think, 24 teams by the end of the decade, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it was inevitable that they were going to expand the field. So
are you concerned at all that they're adding too quickly? It's hard to doubt Don Garber, really. They do their due diligence, right?
Yep.
They're very methodical. And they strategize up until now anyway very
mm-hmm.
well. You know that they know what they have, and they haven't done the old NASL.
No, not at all.
Right, but I just wonder if they're going a little bit quick.
I don't mind it. I mean, I share some of that concern about whether they're going a little bit too quickly too soon. But I mean, there's a certain economic realities here. Is that you know whenever a new expansion team comes in the league, they're paying exorbitant expansion fees.
Of course, yeah.
I think
yeah.
LA. Whatever the new ones is going to be like $100 million. When you think about it, TFC's transfer or expansion fee was, I think, somewhere like $30 or $40 million.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
you know, it's hard to say no to that kind of money. I would have more concerns if I didn't think that they could sustain it in terms of players, right? I mean, like, how are you going to field, you know, 24 teams? Like, where are all these players going to come? But, I mean, you know, we're talking about a world market here, right? So, I mean, and I think more and more MLS is sort of going beyond just the college ranks to fill their rosters. They're, you know, they're making serious inroads in Central and South America. You're seeing more European players here.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, the fact that Thierry Henry did so well here and took it seriously, and with Lampard and David Villa and Kaká, that's not only is that going to attract major stars, but it's also going to attract, I think, guys like, you know, Bradley Wright Phillips and players of that caliber. So
yeah.
I don't think they're going to have any problem filling, you know, roster spots on those teams. It's just, yeah, I mean, we've just seen the example of the NASL, right? I mean, it wasn't that long ago that they expanded rather quickly and they eventually died out. But I think MLS is on far firmer ground than NASL.
And they have a good history in picking the right expansion cities as well. Seattle, obviously, huge
yep.
success. You know, Portland, obviously Toronto as well, if you go back, you know, in
yeah.
7 years.
Chivas not so much.
Chivas not so much, yeah. But they figured that out and they folded it, right?
Yeah, yeah. And they're going to come back.
LA team's going to be interesting.
Yeah, and you wonder, too, about, and Atlanta is, you know, a very good market that's going to come in. You wonder, too, if, you know, whether they made the right move to put another team in LA, just because, I mean, the Galaxy don't even sell out at StubHub Center. So now you're going to put another team in LA?
I wonder that straight away, yeah, yeah. But, I mean,
there are other markets. I mean, when you look at San Antonio and Minneapolis and Sacramento, they all have either NASL teams or USL Pro teams.
LA will have two MLS teams and not one NFL team. Think about that.
Well, yeah, that's kind of staggering.
Staggering,
too.
Isn't it?
So I just wonder if it makes more sense to go to a market, a new market with a, you know, a proven fan base, and instead of putting another team in LA. Not that the Galaxy are struggling, because they're not, but I don't know. For me, it would have made more sense to go to a new city in another part of the country to sort of expand MLS's footprint in other regions of the country.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. We'll see. Be interesting. Should be a fascinating final as well. You know that Landon Donovan's swan song. MLS would like to, I think, see him off with another championship.
Well, you think about like when you know, Beckham. A couple of years ago when he played his final game in MLS, that was at StubHub Center.
Yeah.
And, exactly. You know, they couldn't write it more fairy tales. So,
I
think, you know, obviously this would be a great story for Landon Donovan if he could close out his career on his home sort of stadium and go out a winner. And, it just reminds me that, you know, he's only, what, 32, I think?
Yeah, I know.
He's got so much soccer left in him.
He has, but he's, like I said, he's an interesting character.
He is.
There's way more to Landon Donovan than just soccer, which I find refreshing.
Yeah, there's a depth of, there's a lot of depth there. And I'm not talking about soccer, but in terms of his personality and the way he conducts himself.
Didn't he go backpacking his last little hiatus?
Yeah.
It's great. Love to hear that. No, he's also battling depression, he says at times. But the fact that there's more to him, not many guys would take some time off and go backpacking, put it that way, in professional sports.
And I think the fact that, you know, the whole depression thing too, I mean, he's been pretty forthright about that. And I think the fact that he's sort of been open and to talk about it and raise the profile of the issue, I think that's great, because, you know, there are a lot of footballers out there dealing with it, and yet they still think there's some sort of stigma and, you know, something to be ashamed about it. So they kind of bury it. And the fact that he's been able to, you know, elevate this issue within the public square. You know, full credit to him.
Absolutely. Let's switch to some European football, shall we? We'll
sure.
get to Stefan Bionkowski shortly. But the Ballon d'Or have announced their three finalists. You won't believe who two of these guys are.
I'm guessing Messi and Ronaldo.
You are the expert, J-Mo. There's a reason why you're the senior writer at Sportsnet.ca soccer department.
Oh, is that why?
Yeah. Manuel Neuer made it as well, which I'm happy about. He won't win it, but maybe he should win it.
Nice to see a goalkeeper in there for a change.
Yeah, it is. I would, as much as I've got no issue with Ronaldo winning it this year, and I think he will win it,
right,
I would have voted for Neuer. Just to be different.
Okay.
These guys have had the monopolies for 6 years now. Ronaldo, late last year, was injured. I'm taking nothing away from his season, you know, this year in particular. Right. But although the voting was cut off before the end of this season,
right,
this year, of course. But obviously, he's been brilliant this campaign, but very ordinary in the World Cup.
Although he was injured.
I know, but regardless, so.
Yeah, no, you know, no doubt.
Late in the season for Real Madrid, he got the job done, but he was injured there as well.
True.
You know, didn't reach the heights late in the season than he had shown before. But Neuer, listen, German champion, World Cup winner, doesn't see much ball, people will argue, but when he does, he stops it.
Certainly influential. I mean, you know, the fact that he's even been nominated, I mean, I was kind of looking this up, and I don't think it was the last time a goalkeeper made the short list for the Ballon d'Or was, you know, 2006 when Gigi Buffon did it. So the fact that he was even nominated with players the caliber of Messi and Ronaldo should speak to sort of his the incredible season that he enjoyed.
Only Lev Yashin has ever won it.
That's
as
right.
a goalkeeper, and that was before FIFA kind of ruined the whole award, when it was just France Football Magazine's Ballon d'Or, when it was really authentic.
Yeah, a couple of years to come close. I remember there was a time in the 70s when Dino Zoff finished runner-up, and no one since Yashin.
Do you put more weight on a World Cup year, on that tournament?
I think so. I mean, look, I'm not big on individual awards to begin with, you know, especially in a team sport. But, you know, how could it not? I mean, you're talking about the biggest sporting event in the world. And I remember, I'm trying to think, 2002 and 2006 when the Brazilian Ronaldo won it.
And Cannavaro
won it in 2006. When you look at their club seasons that year, not that they were terrible, but they weren't lights out. but they were voted.
No way Cannavaro should have won that year. No way.
Well, but based strictly on World Cup.
Because they put way too much weight on it.
Well, I don't know that, they put too much weight on it. But, I mean, you're talking about the biggest sporting event in the world. You're talking about the apex of the sport. So kind of hard not to sort of weigh it a little bit more.
Sure, but there's one way you can weigh it to a certain degree, absolutely, but not to the point where that's the sole reason for a guy winning the award. In Cannavaro's case, it was. And listen, I love Cannavaro. And listen, at the World Cup, that's one of the best defensive performances I've ever seen.
I would agree.
Over a 3 or 4 week stretch, ever.
Yep, absolutely.
But aside from that, for Juve that year?
He did okay. I mean, he wasn't
bad,
awful.
But he wasn't a Ballon d'Or winner.
No. But I mean, I think just that sort of that month in June and July when, as you said, it was probably one of the greatest defensive performances like in the history of the modern game.
Did he win the FIFA Player of the Year and the Ballon d'Or that year? Both
he did.
Of them, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
He did.
Yeah.
So.
Anyway, we'll see. 442 Magazine, by the way, have released their top 100 players in
football.
Oh, it's interesting. In fact, I love it. Top 10. You want to hear top 10?
Sure.
Okay. Number 10. Arjen Robben. I'd have him probably a little bit higher, but still. Number 9, Angel Di Maria. 8, Luis Suarez. 7, Diego Costa. 6 is Ibra. 5 is Gareth Bale, which I thought was pretty high. Still, great player. 4 is Neuer. 3, ready for this?
I want to guess. Yeah, I don't know.
Guess.
Eden Hazard.
Leo Messi.
3?
Yep.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm interested to hear 1 and 2 then.
Well, number 1, we can guess.
Yeah, Ronaldo. Who's number 2?
Philipp Lahm. I like it.
Oh, I like Philipp Lahm, but I think he's the second best footballer in the world.
No, but look at Messi's year. Okay? Look at Messi's year. It's not been vintage in the Messi. Now, listen, even Messi at 50% is still a pretty damn good player. Right, and that's why he's 3 in the world. But if you look at last season, pretty good World Cup. But Philipp Lahm, World Cup winner, by far the best right back in world football.
Yep.
In fact, you could say the best defender in world football. But he's so much more than just that. Listen, let's be honest. When they're all in form, it's Messi, Ronaldo. We know that.
Yeah, yeah.
All right? But I like the fact that it's different. We've got Lahm at number 2 from it. What a year he's had, Philipp Lahm.
It was great. It was great. Absolutely.
Really fantastic.
It was lights out at the World Cup. And, the fact that he's been able to sort of, fit into Pep Guardiola's sort of system where he's playing center midfield at times and then being shifted around.
Of course, it's a great segue too, isn't it? Philipp Lahm to the German Bundesliga.
Yes.
Stefan Bienkowski is one of our Bundesliga gurus. And Stefan, listen, last time we spoke, we were discussing the struggles of Borussia Dortmund and Jurgen Klopp, and I think we all agree, well, it's early still, they'll figure it out, don't worry, it's a long season. Well, here we are now, we're in December 1st. They lost to Eintracht Frankfurt on the weekend, dead last in the Bundesliga. Can we worry now?
Yeah, I think we should. I think fans are certainly beginning to worry for the first time in since the early 90s, we saw Borussia Dortmund fans booing their own fan, their own club, their own manager and their own side. So this is certainly untested waters for Jurgen Klopp right now, in more ways than one.
What are the issues, Stefan? I mean, I know that they've had some injury issues and Marco Reus is out till January, I think. But, I mean, aside from that, why is this team in last place?
I think it's a much more complicated problem than people initially feared. I think, as you quite rightfully say, they've had a ludicrous amount of unluck when it comes to injuries. But as we've seen over the last month, 6 weeks or so, a lot of the key players have been coming back and nothing has changed. And I think when you watch, I think a lot of Dortmund fans have probably known this themselves for quite a while, but this Dortmund team isn't the same one that won the league title 2 seasons ago. It's the same players, it's the same coach, it's the same board and chairman, but it is, it's not the same tactics, it's not the same ethos. So I think in that sense, that's probably the main thing more than any injuries or anything like that. I mean, the team simply don't press the way they used to. They don't have the same hunger like they did. I mean,
if you could allow me to continue the silly rant for a moment.
Sure.
he did an interview with BT Sport. I'm not sure if it made its way over the pond. But one of the interesting things was that he talked a lot about the fact that these players, you know, they've grew up at Dortmund. And he talked about it in a loving sense. You know, he says, oh, you know, these guys, when they came here, they're all young, inexperienced, and now they all have families, they have kids, etc., etc. But what I took from that, which I think is quite evident when you watch them play now, a lot of these senior players are content. You know, you've got your Lukas Piszczek, you've got your Neven Subotic, and there's others as well. And they don't have that same hunger that they did when they first burst on the scene. So this is only my theory, and it's probably one a lot of Dortmund fans would laugh out of town, but I think a lot of the senior players at Dortmund simply don't have the same hunger that they used to have. And that's something that I think is quite evident from the manner in which we watch Dortmund, where they have these players, they have the talent, but they don't get in teams' faces like they used to. And I think the old excuse that they're not fit or that they're injured no longer applies.
So do you think that when all these players join Bayern Munich, it'll get better there?
Well, you know, I mean, Bayern Munich have signed the ones who did keep trying. Right. Robert Lewandowski's always been a very committed player. No matter what he's won, I think you can quite clearly tell from the way he plays. He's quite like David Costa, actually, in the sense that, you know, he quite simply throws himself around the pitch. He never stops running. And Mario Götze is obviously a very optimistic man. I mean, I think I'm right in saying he's about to release a music album. I don't know.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
That's all we need.
You know, these are guys who have continued to reach for the stars, and I think Bayern Munich have noticed that. I think one of the interesting things is one player who has came into the side and actually shown some consistency is Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, the forward. Yeah. And I think one of the reasons that we see him outshining his comrades in the Dortmund time or in the Dortmund side is because he's one that hasn't won these things yet. He's one who isn't comfortable with the status quo. And maybe that's a perfect example of, you know, the difference between these players who've already won it all and are content with just how things are going and quite happy with second place or, well, you know, relegation as things going at the moment, and the players, the younger players, the inexperienced players who are coming into the squad. And, they're hungry. So I think he's a good example of this, you know, the way Dortmund used to play. And I think that's Klopp's biggest problem right now.
Stefan, the last 2 years, we've taken great glee in ripping Sir Alex Ferguson and then David Moyes about Shinji Kagawa. Why can't he get into the United team? He's not good enough, obviously, or what's happening? He goes back to Dortmund this offseason, and he can't get into the team either. What's happened to Shinji Kagawa, who was just a really, really great footballer 3 years ago?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not entirely sure myself. I actually quite like Shinji Kagawa, and I think he's actually been okay since he arrived back at Dortmund. I was surprised he didn't start against Arsenal. And he seemed to be doing okay during the weekend game against Frankfurt. And then all of a sudden, Klopp pulls him off. I think he's one of the players who clearly feels he has to prove himself. And I'm a little miffed as to what Klopp has planned for him. He clearly wasn't a planned signing. He was clearly one who just popped up in the shop window, and, you know, Klopp and the rest of the board clearly thought, okay, perfect opportunity to find a player that we know, we love. And they did so. And I don't think Klopp really thought it through. I don't think he understands where to place Shinji Kagawa. We've seen him play a number of positions, I think. I was right in saying Frankfurt. When I watched the game at the weekend, he was almost playing as a second striker, which I certainly don't think suits him. So I think it's a simple case that you just simply don't know where to play him. Shinji Kagawa came into the side almost as a replacement for Mario Götze, and he did remarkably well as that kind of central midfield playmaker. He doesn't have the legs to play a box-to-box midfielder, as we all know. He's not very physical. But he's very, very good at making plays. And the problem is he's came back to Dortmund and there's other people there to do that. We've got Henrik Mkhitaryan, who Dortmund spent a fortune signing. And I think one of the main reasons Kagawa can't get back into the team is Klopp, is because Klopp simply doesn't want to drop his most expensive player. He probably feels he has a point to prove, even though Armenian hasn't been playing well at all. So in my book, I'd say Kagawa has played well, and I think he is probably one of Dortmund's better players, but because of politics and all sorts of things, he can't simply fit back into that number 10 role he did so well before going to Man United.
We're talking to Glasgow-based reporter Stefan Bienkowski here on the Soccer Central podcast. Stefan, with all of that's going on with Dortmund and their struggles on the domestic front, what's Klopp's future at the club? I mean, has there been serious talk about, you know, the club making a change? And you know, obviously he's been linked to, you know, a number of clubs, including Arsenal. How might, you know, the club's sort of recent downturn in form sort of hurt his prospects?
Well, we've seen over the course of the season the kind of the dialogue from between the fans and the club and the media alternate. I think at the very start it was all very quite happy, quite open, in the sense that, you know, okay, this is a blip, we'll get past it as we always do. But as things have gone deeper and deeper and deeper, I think the club and Klopp himself have felt more and more that they have to answer for. I think a very telling note this weekend was after the game, in which Klopp said he won't be stepping down unless the club could find someone who is more appropriate. And I think Klopp would have a large say in that as well. I mean, I don't see Klopp leaving anytime soon. In the same manner, I don't see Dortmund getting relegated anytime soon. But I think in the long term, I think he's done himself quite a lot of damage in terms of his reputation. I don't think he's a crazy tactician like Mourinho or like Guardiola. I don't think many people do. I think he's a very hands-on manager who gets the best out of his players. But the longer this keeps going on at Dortmund, the more and more it's going to affect his reputation, and it's going to affect his standing at the club. And that obviously goes back to the fact that he had this good crop of players, which he was able to get so much out of. But they've grown content. So it's a simple fact that he's either going to have to move and change, or the squad will. And as things stand, I think it'll probably be a case that he will stay, and then we'll see some major changes in the squad.
With Bayern being Bayern and Dortmund struggling, almost lost in the shuffle so far this year, at least, you know, outside Germany, is the player of Wolfsburg, who have been really good. Second place right now. They beat Mönchengladbach on the weekend. They did lose to Everton, of course, last week in the Europa League. But how good is this Wolfsburg team? Because you look at their 1 through 11, there's some really good players in that team.
Yeah, there is. And I think most importantly, they've got a very good coach in the sideline as well, in Dieter Hecking. He's not as charismatic as Klopp, and he's not as, you know, sexy as Guardiola, in a tactical sense, of course. He's a very pragmatic manager, and he gets the best out of the players that he's got. And I think, as we see at Wolfsburg, he arrived at the club, which had some outstanding footballers, and he is now getting the best out of them. I mean, like so many teams in Germany, Wolfsburg are just one of a long list of, you know, sleeping giants. Obviously not in a kind of traditional sense, in the way to, you know, Schalke or Hamburg, because they'd also be from a much smaller village. But they have untold fortunes and the manner in which they're bankrolled by Volkswagen. And as we've seen from the squad that you just mentioned there, it's full of superstar players. In that sense, I think you're quite right in saying they have flew under the radar, simply because, you know, there are other teams. Everyone talks up Schalke simply because they're great entertainment, because, you know, they're either on form or they're falling apart. Gladbach are usually everyone's favourite side in a more romantic sense. But Wolfsburg are much simply one of the more impressive sides. And they are a team who could push on and challenge Bayern. I mean, the simple matter of the fact is that people talk about Bayern walking this league title, but they're only 7 points ahead of Wolfsburg. And you look at a team like Wolfsburg with Kevin De Bruyne in the midfield, he's already got 9 assists this season.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
You know, they have these players who can hurt Bayern. And we can obviously go back to one of the first games in the season in which Bayern only just managed to scrape past Wolfsburg. So, yes, they have their blips. I mean, they lost to Everton, and of course they lost early in the season before that. I've forgotten who it was, and I think it might be Leverkusen. So, you know, they're not perfect, but they're slowly but very surely pushing their way up. And I think it won't be Bayern that are afraid of that. It'll be people at Dortmund just sitting there thinking, yeah, you know what, we will get ourselves sorted. But what happens by then, if Wolfsburg are already established and they've already got themselves in line to take that second spot for the next few seasons.
Yeah, it's a very good point. Very good point. Hub Stevens, he took over at Stuttgart after Armin Wey stepped down last week. The Dutchman rescued Stuttgart from relegation last season. Did you get a sense that he might be able to do it again? Because obviously Stuttgart's struggling.
Yeah, they are. I mean, it's really quite bizarre the manner in which Stuttgart have kind of fallen apart here. like I said to you, there's a long list of sleeping giants in the Bundesliga, and Stuttgart seems to be the bottom of that list in the moment, which is a real shame because they share that bottom spot with Hamburg, and then obviously Tottenham are below them. So it's not a great time to be a Bundesliga purist and trying to talk up how great the league is when you've got these teams down the bottom of the league. But, you know, Hub Stevens has obviously got a fantastic record in the Bundesliga. I think he was quite unfairly demonised and then ultimately made the scapegoat at Schalke. So he's a player, he's a manager rather, with plenty of experience, got plenty of skill. And Stuttgart do have players there who can actually do things. I mean, it's much like Hamburg in the sense that they've got these players who simply just need a coach who can come in with a little more pragmatism and simply keep trying to push them forward. I mean, I'm just trying to think now in terms of the best way to make a comparison, but I can't help anyone but think of Hamburg in the sense that they've just simply got these players who are inconsistent and they need a proper manager to put their their arm around them and give them a boost. And Hub Stevens is probably one of the best player coaches in German football at the moment to do that.
Stefan, always a pleasure. Thank you so much, and we'll chat to you real soon.
Thanks so much, guys. Cheers.
Thanks, Stefan.
Stefan Binkowski. Yeah, the Bundesliga, very interesting this year. You know, if you can remove Bayern from the equation, because that's pretty boring, they're dominating once again, they're going to win the championship. But Dortmund's a fascinating story in Wolfsburg. Schalke now with Roberto Di Matteo in charge now as well. They had a big win on the weekend.
They did.
Know? So there's some good storylines. Leverkusen under Roger Schmidt, you know, once again playing really great soccer. And in their third right now, third or fourth anyway. So, yeah, it's an interesting league. It really is. Before we leave, Jamie, we should touch on the Premier League briefly.
Yep.
United, they beat Hull. RVP scores.
Finally.
Rooney scores. Chris Smalling scores. Do you believe in RVP that he's going to find his form again, or despite that performance? It was a great goal.
It was.
But aside from that, he wasn't, you know, typically RVP in 31, as I wrote last week in the Sportsnet dossier.
Right.
You know, he's 31 now. He hasn't played great 90-minute games for a long time now.
Right.
Is he over the hill?
I don't know that he's over the hill. I don't think he's what he was in previous campaigns and even at the World Cup. And even at the World Cup, it was kind of a slow
start. Two good games, and that was it.
So I think, you know, this is, from all indications, this is, you know, the start of the slow decline, right? And now whether he can sort of remain a relevant player for Man United, you know, I have my doubts just because of, you know, with Rooney's presence there. And I think as long as Rooney is there, he's always going to be the main man, the go-to guy. So, you know, maybe this goal against Hull will be the start of a mini run for him and start to turn things around. We'll see.
I believe after this year, he has a loyalty clause that can kick into his contract, and it's not cheap. It's a lot of money.
Really?
It's like 10 million or something. Mm. So you do wonder, you know, United are renowned for being ruthless. Van Hull as well, even to his preferred choices, and RVP's been one of Van Hull's boys for years and years and years. You wonder, from a business standpoint, is it not better to cash in while you can?
Yeah, it might
be. Because, you know, Van Hull apparently rates Rooney really highly.
Yes.
And says he can make him better. At the same time, you got Falcao and that deal coming through.
Right.
He's done nothing so far. He's been hurt, of course.
He's been hurt, but
But, I mean, is it going to be one or the other, or both or neither? It's interesting, right?
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic. I think for me, it's still too early to say. I think we'll get a better indication as the season progresses because all three of them have missed, you know, games through injury, right? So I think, obviously, Rooney is the clear number one, but I think we'll get a better sense of where Falcao and RVP fit in the long term as they get more games and more reps.
City into second place now, beat Southampton 3-0. Bit of a reality check for Southampton. But they weren't bad at all in this game.
No, they weren't. You know,
I
thought they played them pretty even in the first half, but then it was just that sort of Touré goal that set them off on City that really got them rolling. And, you know, and Joe Hart, to his credit, made some saves to keep City in. So
I get the impression that Yaya's beginning to percolate a little bit and he's slowly warming up. And I think he's going to have a big second half of the season.
Possibly, yeah.
I mean, he's been horrible the first half of the season, but the last couple of weeks I've seen some flashes. He scored a couple of goals, and we criticized him vehemently on this very podcast.
Well,
I did, yeah.
Let's be clear.
You weren't an apologist for him, though, were you?
No, I don't think I was as negative as you were.
Well, he was an embarrassment.
Well, I think that's a bit
Really?
Yeah.
The red card in the Champions League wasn't embarrassing for the club?
Absolutely.
Okay, so it was an embarrassment.
Well, that act was an embarrassment. I wouldn't say he was himself an embarrassment.
Well, he was the cause of the act, though.
Yes, but that's one incident you're talking about.
If it's an embarrassing incident, surely the person who perpetrated the embarrassing incident is embarrassing.
Absolutely, but that doesn't sort of override everything else that he's done.
Which is what this year? Nothing.
Well, again, I think that's a bit strong, James.
All right. I'll tell you what's strong is the yellow card in Kun Aguero for diving in the first
half.
Oh,
that was absurd.
Oh, my word. It was clearly a penalty. Well, it wasn't even it could go either way. It was clearly a penalty.
No, absolutely. I don't know what the official there like thought he saw. And I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. Does Aguero have a reputation as a bit of a diver? I don't think so.
No more than the rest of the damn foreigners.
Well, boy, you're on fire today.
Like Ross Barkley last week, for example, those foreigners.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Of course, I'm jesting. You've got to be careful with sarcasm.
Careful what you say, yeah. You've been getting in trouble with your sarcasm.
He has dived in the past, but...
Okay, but not...
But he's no worse than...
I don't think he has a reputation as a diver, right?
So,
I mean, I don't even think you can say the referee was taking his past sort of history into consideration. So I'm not sure what the officials saw there.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Weird one.
Anything else you want to touch on from the weekend?
How did Arsenal do?
They won.
Who did they play again?
1-0.
I can't even remember
West
that.
Brom. It's the early one on Saturday, so it's
right.
A long time ago, in fact.
That's right. And Liverpool, big
win against Stoke.
Big win against Stoke.
Yep. Steven Gerrard benched finally on his 16th anniversary.
That was pretty telling, actually.
You know what, though? I mean, Roger said a while back he can't play three games in a week, right? And he played two games. This would be the third game in a week.
Right.
So he drops him, but then post-match he goes, I feel bad now because I didn't realize it was his 16th anniversary. And the game day program had a big thing.
How could he not know?
It's his 16th, though. It's not his 10th or his 20th. It's his 16th. It's a nice occasion.
Right.
But you can't play a guy out of, sentiment because it's his 16th anniversary.
Well.
It's like when you meet a girl and you go out and you have your six-month anniversary. Big deal. 16 doesn't mean anything.
You're so romantic. Wow.
But, there's certain milestone dates, right?
You're preaching to the choir. Yeah, yeah. I agree. I mean, he
has to be benched at some point. He's not playing well. He's tired.
Right.
Whatever it is, he's not playing well. Bench him. That's fine. It's Stoke, for crying out loud.
Right. I mean, if you're going to make the decision, then make the decision. You shouldn't sort of apologize for it later.
Like
especially for a ridiculous reason like that, like you didn't realize it was 16.
Yeah.
Well, so what?
Is he supposed to?
Like, as he said, you can't sort of hand out sort of starts and caps just because it's based on sentimentality.
Precisely. And in fairness, he used him as a sub. He came on, and 5 minutes later, they score the goal.
Yeah.
So it's brilliant management, if you ask me, by...
That was a brave play by Glenn Johnson, by the way.
He paid for the price, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, they stapled his head shut on the field. So, I mean, nice to see from Glenn Johnson. He gets a lot of flack, and deservedly so. But, boy, he put his head into the fray.
Head on the line.
Absolutely.
So to speak. Yeah,
that was pretty big.
It was. Oh, JMO, I guess we're out of time, aren't we? When you wrap up the show.
Yeah, I got to plug some stuff here. We're showing Premier League. There's Premier League games on Tuesday
Mid-week.
And Wednesday.
Outstanding.
Midweek, in addition to this weekend. And we're showing Leicester City against Liverpool and Manchester United versus Stoke City. And then there's a game on Wednesday. I think it's Everton and I can't even remember. I've got to make proper notes before I come into the studio.
We'll give you one job.
Yeah,
one
I know. Job. I know. But for a full rundown of games, we'll be showing you can go to sportsnet.ca and check out the broadcast schedule. That's another edition of the podcast in the books. We'll be back with another edition of the show soon. Until then, cheers for listening.